My podcast. What's it called? Don't Worry by Happy with Harry. Here's my podcast. And welcome to episode 111. This is recorded at Podcast Social Club in Thirsk. Podcast Festival is absolutely wonderful, and it was me and Sophie Whelan, who is an absolute legend. If you haven't heard of her, bloody hell, look her up. She's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely love her. I wouldn't have wanted to do it with anyone else. But because we're both a bit chaotic, it sort of starts quite abruptly. You'll probably see why. So, yeah, thanks so much for listening. Sorry it's taken a bit longer to get out. I had to edit a bit. You'll see what that is. Thanks for listening. And check out Podcast Social Club on the website and social media, because it was really fantastic what they did. Afterwards as well, I tried to drop Sophie the station, got all discombobulated, knocked her over a bollard, so I'm worried that Thirsk's Tesco going to be after me because of that. And if you live in Thirsk and you see a wonky bollard in Tesco, you know that's down to me. So hopefully you'll have heard the podcast and now every time, and you enjoyed it, and now every time you see the wonky bollard, you'll let out a smile.
I thought this could be an hour of a monologue.
Well, yeah, exactly. So the problem is, when people start at the beginning of the podcast, is I wasn't in a very good place then. So it's just every episode is pretty much me having a breakdown and crying. So it's quite embarrassing, really.
But it's more point in case, isn't it? It's about mental health. You're showing them what it's really like, aren't you?
Well, yeah. Well, one guy says that him and his friends, why is there a blue bag up there? Him and his friends listened to episode 17 when they feel their life is rubbish, because it makes them feel better, because my life was more rubbish at the time. I said, oh, thank you. I hope it wasn't that.
What happened on episode 17?
Episode 17 was when... Oh, I'll tell you what it was, but it's quite... Well, so what it was, so I have a fiance. I don't say fiance because I think it sounds wanky. And it's like Michael Bublé, isn't it? It's Booba Michael Wajanecki. But don't get me started on Beyonce. And I have a fiance and he's got lots of feral children. And it was just in that. So I was really mentally ill. I convinced myself that I didn't need medication. And then tried to throw myself out of a moving car. So I was all over the shop. Sophie's eating a hot dog. If you, why has it got such a bite to it? It made it...
I wasn't expecting that, and I thought she's on a flow now. I can just subtly sort of chomp away at this hot dog,
but
clearly
snapped,
I can't.
Didn't it? Made it a snapping noise. Yeah. That means it's German. They're very in it. The German ones. They are you German? That's a Yorkshire sausage.
You said that with such anger and indignance. How dare you?
Let the table, we are off. You and your shit mental podcast. No, that's fair. So I was trying to get... me and the kids were trying to get to know each other. And then what happened was I bake and make arts and crafts and stuff with the kids, and then one of them is a compulsive liar and said that I shoved him, which I categorically didn't. And then the mum said to my fiance, tell that bitch to keep your hands off my son, like something out of EastEnders. So I just found it very overwhelming and started crying, because I was just bait. You've got mustard on your nose.
Are you joking? God, I'm really sorry about this. I'm starving. It's been quite a mad...
Yeah, answer, and it's my fault.
It's not your fault.
It is my fault.
It was just the chaos of travel, isn't it? And then I ended up on a train. I thought, and I had to suddenly dash and not have breakfast. Then he's there with a hot dog, and I thought, I've just got to take advantage, but I've been very conspicuous with it, so sorry about that. Yeah, has it gone?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And as well, because I went outside to get Sophie to pay for the taxi that she was getting from the train station. But I went, so she just appeared, and I went, where's the taxi? She was like, I hitchhiked.
No, taxis at Thurscarthus, so there was this kind family gave me a lift and didn't murder me, so fabulous.
So what happened was, is I passed my driving test on Wednesday, last Wednesday, and then I got a car, and everyone says to you, when you are learning to drive, oh my God, it will change your life when you get a car, and then when you get a car, and you have to spend thousands on it, because it keeps breaking down, everyone goes, that's just cars, isn't it? Yeah. And it's like, make your mind up. I found it very stressful.
Yeah.
So I was supposed to get you in Piccadilly, and I realised as well that in doing this podcast, I've somehow managed to find the two most chaotic people probably in the north.
Yeah, that's probably true.
We're here now. You feel like you can't eat the hot dog.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure going on with this hot dog now, isn't there? Because I'm just thinking, when's an apt time in a mental health podcast to take a bite of your hot dog? You know, you could be really opening up. I think, all right, she's talking my window, but actually be quite insensitive, wouldn't it?
I'd say everyone now knows that you're eating a hot dog.
That's true.
So you can eat, so don't want to get so nothing.
Do it all, you know, they want the ambience of a hot dog, don't they?
Oh, wow, there's those people, isn't there, that look like the sounds, don't they?
Oh, do they?
What's it called? ASBN or something?
ASMR.
Eat my
well, I'm there to support their needs this afternoon.
Yeah. You have people just like, what do they do? Just like tickle a squirrel or something for like 4 hours.
He laughed too knowingly then.
No, I think he laughed because they don't really tickle squirrels.
Yeah.
So those of you that haven't listened to the podcast, it's a rambling mess. We're like this now. And to be perfectly honest, I did it because, well, I don't know whether I did it because of this, but it's basically I've had all sorts of problems with my mental health, and I've tried to get counselling and all that sort of stuff. I once had a breakdown at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and then my friend said, ring NHS Direct. So I did. I said, I feel very suicidal. I just tried to hang myself with my hair straighteners, and I ended up clamping my eyelid. And and they said, oh, well, we don't think you're an emergency because you seem very self-aware. And I was like, yeah, I'm very self-aware that I'm probably going to kill myself. And then because a lot of the sort of my mental health issues come from like past abuse and stuff like that, so they suggested when I get back in Manchester go to the Emily Pankhurst Centre. So I went there and explained sort of what had happened when I was younger, and then they said, oh my God, this is all very dramatic, we'll put you on the emergency waiting list, which will be about 8 months. And then they said, oh, it gets better. And that was in 2014, and they've never got in touch. So really upsetting. But the thing is, whether you sort of like the podcast or not, it's become, I've accidentally, without realising, cancelled myself. Because waffle to myself for about, well, anything, depends what's happening, between like half an hour and an hour. Maybe 20 minutes sometimes, maybe an hour and a half. I reasoned with myself and then sort of taught myself through things, and I found myself just, so I think circumstances have changed as well, so I feel back on the meds.
Well, counselling's very like that sort of therapy, isn't it, where you're talking and you kind of come into your own conclusions.
Yeah.
As you're talking, so I suppose that makes sort of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I haven't had to pay for the trouble, really.
That's all right, isn't it?
Just done it to myself. Because once I had counselling in Birmingham, and then, not that there's a problem with that, and then as I was coming in, it was snowing, I remember, and there was, underneath the snow, and I thought, oh, that's probably someone that worked, see his glove, so I picked it up, dead rat.
Well, that's scarring, isn't it? Yeah. You need therapy after that, I think.
And what's your journey with mental health, Sophie? Because you're not diagnosed with anything, are
nothing
you?
Nothing specific, but there's a whole array of shite, I think. No, I think for me, I've done a lot of therapy, so different types of therapy. I've done CBT therapy. counselling. So a lot of PTSD sort of stuff because I had trauma growing up. But I think the problem is when you have trauma from birth, it's hardly post-traumatic, is it? Because you started off with PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
So people have PTSD behaviour and they can go, oh, God, I remember who I was before PTSD. I was actually born under those traumatic circumstances.
CTSD, current...
Yeah, I suppose so, because you've always been on that fight or flight frequency. So I have to kind of train myself to be more relaxed, be in my body, be present and stuff like that, because you're coming from a life where it started off in trauma. So everything, my whole way of being has been built on that from a very young age, I suppose. So lots of therapy needed, as you can imagine. And there's lots of mental health in my family, lots of different issues, really, which actually they've just worked out recently that could be all linked to hormones. Because I have a premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is that hormonal... You can feel a bit like you've got bipolar because your mood can be so... And it's all hormone-linked. And they've just worked out that it is genetic. There's all this new science that have discovered that it is a genetic predisposition because there's a cell missing from certain people. They're not able to... process a change in hormones. If you have an influx of new hormonal energy or whatever, you don't have that cell that helps process it all, which would explain a lot, because there's been a lot of bipolar, postnatal depression, you know, lots of stuff like that. Even my uncle Malcolm, who's schizophrenic, his schizophrenia really sort of took over when he got into, well, it's when he was diagnosed, when he became a teenager. I think, yeah, because he had an influx of hormones,
yeah,
probably, and there was... So there's loads, actually, when I look back now and think, God, you can really put the jigsaw together. But without, you know, the right support and, you know, I think class is a big thing and then being female as well. So many of these issues get ignored and misdiagnosed and, you know, so I think there's a lot. So I think a lot of it comes from now, I think, from this lack of cell that we have, which is quite nice to blame it on just one little cell, isn't it? It's nobody's fault, it's the cell, you know. But yes, it's a long... kind of hangover for our whole family, really, that's kind of ran over different generations and a combination of biology, class, and, you know, the fact that a lot of us are women, I think has not helped.
So do you think your mum's missing a cell as well?
Well, it's genetic, and she's been diagnosed with bipolar, sometimes schizoaffective disorder. The diagnosis has changed over the years a lot. Obviously, her main thing is that she's big into heroin. and crack cocaine, she loves it. And, you know, when I've said to her, oh, God. So I said, a cough had gone recently because she's not been having as much because she's been in hospital. And I said, oh, brilliant, you know, you can really tell the difference. She said, not smoking as much. I said, I think it's more the lack of crack cocaine, Mum. Yeah. But then she said, she said, listen, we all have our... You listen, I love a pipe of an evening, write a bit of poetry and have a pipe. We all have our vices, Sophie. You love a cocktail. I think it's a little bit different, isn't it? It's very different. But I do think with her, she was probably self-medicating. And, you know, she got postnatal depression after I was born and was first diagnosis was manic depressive, which is now bipolar. So, and my Auntie Shirley, when she had twins, never the same again. She got bipolar. And you can see that it was a hormonal postnatal thing. So all of it links back to hormones with us lot. If you go back now, you think how unfortunate that lack of research was there because it was mainly a female issue. I mean, I've just assumed with my Uncle Malcolm because I think it makes sense. He was a teenager and, you know, that's when he got his schizophrenia diagnosis. I think that makes complete sense. But because it's mainly a female issue, PMDD and postnatal depression, they haven't actually bothered... to do the research, do you know what I mean? Or to invest any money in it, which I think is kind of sad, but also quite relieving when you can trace it all back. And my mum's been in the system now for 20 years, you know, in and out of high security wards or different hospitals or rehabs or whatever. And actually it's because they don't really know what's wrong with her. She's certainly fucking angry. You know, she keeps setting buildings on fire. She loves a bit of fire, you know, so there's... certain stuff going on, but the diagnosis changes with the political time or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think now if she'd have actually had the correct diagnosis with the cell maybe missing, postnatal depression, maybe she might not be quite in the same state that she's in, you know.
But do you think it's made you realise that, is it because, well, I hope you don't mind me saying, because often you'll be like, right, I'm not drinking anymore, I'm not this drinking,
yeah.
But it's always in your head to be careful. started. So you
I think I've always been quite self-aware. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a chance of that for me. I mean, I've always been quite self-aware. You know, whirlwind as I am, I'm actually pretty grounded in lots of ways, and I've done a lot of therapy, which does help. You know, and there's always that thing. I mean, I've definitely got a bad temper when, you know, if I've had a drink on a bad day. I mean, I punched a comedian in the face recently. He's a cunt. No, he really is, and he really deserved it. And I was quite proud of myself because he's nearly 6 foot, and I'm only 5'3", so I must have been furious. But the thing is, I have to watch that side of me because I've got a temper on me, you know, but never unwarranted. You know, it's the same with my mum.
Oh, he definitely deserved it.
But this is the same with my mum. Nothing passes her, but she doesn't quite know how to process it. Like, she's on a high security ward at the moment after setting a building on fire. Classic mum, very on brand. And I had to go and do the meetings with the whole team of, like, you know, it's doctors, nurses, psychologists, surgeons. And it's probably about 12 people in this room, and they're all speaking about my mum in the second person, which is very odd. The doctor says to me, what do you think? Do you think your mum's ready to be released? I'm thinking, not really. But he said, how do you think she's doing today? And I said, well, probably a bit agitated because we're all speaking about her in second person. I mean, I feel tense. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, it went round like this. But straight away, when we get in the meeting, she doesn't miss a trick, you know. This guy comes in. They introduce all these people we've never seen before. And then one of them goes, hello, I'm here. I'll be doing research, whatever. He says something. She goes, get out. And I'm thinking, Mum, chill the fuck out. This is just a nice man. He's with everybody else. She goes, no, no, no. I know what he is. I'm telling you now, he's a student and I'm his fucking guinea pig. My life is not your experiment. Get the fuck out. And I thought, it's amazing that. She just clocked it straight away. Nothing passes her. Perhaps a bit of an aggressive approach. But she was on the money, and actually it was unfair. There was already 12 people in the room, and then they're adding this extra one just so he can get a better degree. You think it's not fair, actually, that my mum shouldn't be offered the right, and she should have been. And she knows, you see, so she's quite smart. Which I do, you know, think actually there's an observational thing. So she's never, a bit like me, we're never coming from a nasty place, just an angry place of injustice, I think. Yeah, it's injustice that gets us going. But it's true. But I think, yeah, for me, I have to watch it with boozing. And now I know that PMDD is a thing that I have, and I've logged and took a diary of my cycle. I can really see when I'm likely to kind of go off like a whirlwind. And it is always very like clockwork. It's interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So yours isn't connected to because you thought it was?
Endometriosis. I mean, they're all of an ill, because I've got endometriosis as well, so they're all packaged. And I think it's probably something linked with the lack of cell with endo, because I think it's just the fact that, you know, certain things grow and your hormones are out of sync and nothing's working in the way that it should normally. So I'd probably link that back to the cell, but me saying randomly on a podcast, I'd probably link it back to the cell. It's not scientific, you know. But I'd be interested to see. Yeah.
Even with like mental health and stuff, like the I do a mental health gig in Manchester, and I've had to have a word with the audience members because every single month they'll diagnose me with something different, and I'm like, guys, I've already got a full house. We need to stop. They're like, well, thank you, I've got this. But I could definitely relate to that because when I was younger, my mum was from like a little town in Fishleg in Doncaster, which was the one where the bloody floods happened recently. Yeah. If it was flooding back in the day, there would have been a right old hoo-ha because my mum's parents, they had mental health issues, and her dad snipped the phone wire because he thought everyone was trying to speak to him, but it is a telephone. And then he buried, when he died, he buried all this money under the garden. So if there was floods, then maybe the... Yeah, God. So it was quite interesting, actually, because my mum had never had any money. And then when she had money when they died, she was so paranoid that people would steal her money that she never spent the money.
Gosh, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
But anyway, so Mum was from a small town, and my dad was... my dad was born in the 40s when it was still illegal to be gay, and he is gay. So he, I think, was having... he's never sort of said it, but I think you definitely have mental health problems if who you are is being stifled. And in Cornwall, which is backwards at the bloody best of times. And he was, you know, brought up on a farm. So neither of them, even though I think they clearly had mental health problems, they didn't think it was a thing. So when I was acting strangely, from a child, I wouldn't speak to humans for about 2 weeks because I was talking to, I had these rocks with like damp cotton wool. I think I got confused with cress. And these rocks just talking to them, and then the doctor was like, "Do you know what, Vivian? That's mum." He was like, "Yeah, I do think she might need to be put on something because she's not acting normally." And I never fitted in. I was always, you know, those kids at school that just random. They seem all nice and quiet, and then one day they'll flip a table.
Mm.
Yeah, it was like that. And then but
angst building up, yeah, isn't it? Yeah,
definitely. I was just and then. With the abuse of that, I didn't think I could tell anyone. Well, I couldn't really tell anyone, and then when I did tell someone, because I showed this letter that this guy that was abusing me gave me, and then I showed the letter to this couple in my class at school, and they said because he spelt meet as in I will meet you in meet, M-E-A-T, and they decided that that's a spelling mistake I would have written, so then showed everyone the letter and told everyone that I was lying about it, yeah. So then I just didn't tell anyone, and then the doctor said I needed to be put on something, and then my parents said no, and then that's how I started drinking and doing drugs young, because I just wanted something to, well, because I was essentially told my way of thinking was wrong, so I didn't know how to drown it out, so to drown it out I'd drink and do drugs and just had a really sad existence, so
self-medicated,
definitely,
yeah.
And even now I have to be a bit like, so I think we're similar like that, aren't we? I have to be very aware because I definitely don't do drugs anymore, but I'll have an odd wine at Christmas. But I think because usually
I have to be watchful of my drinking now, more conscious of it, because if you've got that personality,
yeah,
you know, you have to just be aware of it, don't you? It's
do you remember when me and Sophie's boyfriend did a gig together in Manchester, and then we met up with you afterwards, and you come bursting in like a whirlwind, and you were like, "You'll never guess what happened. I was dancing, and then you did a high kick, and then you flip-flop through the air, and it hit the DJ, sound booth.
That was karaoke.
And all the music got out.
I mean, the thing is, I'll never change that. That's always going to be who I am. But it's just knowing when you're drinking and what reasons, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I have to watch. But eccentrically doing karaoke, I mean, that's me at my absolutely feeling my most fabulous. But it has to be coming from a joyful place. You know, if I'm more likely to drink, like, you know, anger radiating off you, it's never going to be a good evening. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's exactly. Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head.
But it's knowing when, isn't it? And actually, now I think if I'm due on, I'm probably not going to go out and get shit-faced, because the likelihood is, you know, you bump into a misogynistic comedian and you punch him in the face. So now I'm just having to really think about, you know, things like that, which I think it does work, doesn't it? I think just being a bit conscious with it, you know, has helped me, definitely.
But then because you've... I don't know whether it's about being clever, but you do have to sort of know yourself enough to be conscious of it, whereas definitely when I was at my most worst, when people were telling me I had a problem, I was telling them that their problem was that they've got the problem wrong. So I think it's, whereas now I totally get it. And I think because we're both quite sort of ambitious and want to do the best that we can with our lives, so I think...
And be a good human being. You want to be a nice person, don't you? And actually, you know, if your actions are not consistently nice because you know, drunk and behaving like an arsehole, then you're not a nice person, are you? Alcohol does change you, doesn't it? It doesn't make the best person of you. You see people that drink all the time. I've got a friend who unfortunately has become a bit of an alcoholic, really, and it is sad to watch, because the ability to be present and kind and generous is fading rapidly with him, which is a shame, because he's a wonderful person. But addiction of any kind makes you quite selfish, doesn't it? So it is a tricky one, isn't it? You have to watch it, I think, in this industry.
Oh, definitely.
Because it's quite hedonistic, you know, I think. And then you're performing in bars a lot, aren't you? And
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. When I first started, I was getting a free drink, like free drinks every night.
You don't get a fee, you get free drinks. So if you're starting out, you think, well, sold it, you know. Yeah.
And then one day I was like, wait a minute, I haven't not drank for 3 years. It's very easy. And then when you live in, look at that, got mud on my shoe.
The lovely shoes.
Oh, thank you, $12.99.
Really?
Yeah, Reebok Classics. You know TK Maxx? This isn't TK Maxx. It's M&M Direct, which is like an online TK Maxx. But $12.99, I got three pairs.
Brilliant.
Which was a genius.
Are they sponsoring this podcast? They should be now, should they?
Reebok, if you're listening, get in touch. Or M&M, yeah. M&M. No, M&M was that song. I got a little something for you.
Oh, God. We've taken quite a fabulous detour.
It's good that I got a few pairs because on my first drive last week that I had by myself, I ended up getting lost in a forest, reversed the car into a bog, and then ruined a pair of trainers. And the RAC man said that in all of his 15 years, he'd never known such a tricky situation. And I was like, this is my first act. Darn it. I had questions.
All right, go on.
But yeah. we haven't...
While you get your questions, I'm going to have a bite of this hot dog.
Have a bite. Well, no, because now I'm silent. Well, God, that's a mouthful. Oh, I remember you saying a while ago I thought it was quite interesting because I'd never really thought about it, that we've all got areas, because I said something about a cat and you went, you've definitely got areas of psychosis, and I was like, what?
No, that sounds very offensive to say to someone. I think we're on spectrums, aren't we? Like, I'm definitely on the psychosis spectrum. I'm not saying I have psychosis, but obviously there's so much of it in my family. You know, my Uncle Malcolm, he spends most of his afternoons, you know, in a Wetherspoons, laughing into a packet of port scratchings. He's got psychosis. My mum has psychosis, bipolar. They're all on the mania spectrum, which I definitely have. I think about even how I write and stuff. But they did this thing, didn't they, recently? They did research that proves that successful comedians have more psychotic traits than anybody else, right? Which I think's great, because it means I'm genetically wired to be fucking hilarious. But one of the things they said is because they connect thoughts that are not normally connected. You go from one extreme to another, it's got that same erratic nature to it. I thought that's very true, because I've got another friend, who his family, there's loads of autism in his family, and actually he's not autistic, but he has similar traits of the precision. You know, he's a musician and he's brilliant with instruments, and there's something about it. I think there's a different spectrums that provide different qualities that are actually really positive. But the psychosis one, I think, would be where I'd position myself. And you, because you do have that kind of erratic thought processes that are not normally connected. And bipolar is on that spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the more manic side of it.
Very
you know,
manic.
A lot of energy. Sometimes I don't know what to do with all this bloody energy. When I've got it go, you know, when I've got a lot of energy... You know, which is why being on stage is so helpful, because you just get to flounce around. And
do you have your like down days? Because I used to get really sad that because I think comedy and writing and stuff is now my new addiction, so I've sort of put everything into it. But sometimes, usually around this time of year, I just think it's because it's when my mum died and sort of that sort of thing. Mm. And I just get really, really down. And this is the best year it's been, actually. Before, I'll just like hibernate and not speak to anyone for about 3 months. I get down, and then I'm not very good at relaxing either, so I always beat myself up if I'm not being productive, even though you cannot be productive 24 hours a day. And then so I'll get down about that, and then a friend said to me, but Harriet, because you're so manic, when you are up you probably get twice the amount of work done. So then you don't need to be sad
when you
can't
take
manage
that downtime.
I do
work very fast, and I think quite fast. I'm quite fast paced with things, and I always have a lot of energy. I do struggle to relax, like you have to teach myself to relax. It's very boring. I don't quite know how to do it, but I don't really get down so much. I mean, I have the odd moment, but really it's just a lot of intense manic energy all the time. I don't really feel like relaxing, you know.
Even you and your boyfriend had that night in. You were mate. I got you that lamp, and every so often, you were apparently just making Johnny get up, come to the corner of the room, and appreciate the new ambience that the lamp had created.
Yeah, it's a fabulous lamp. It's a blue owl with a head on it, with a lampshade head. I love it. But I think I get overly excited about stuff like that. Like,
that's
I love feng
though.
Shui, and I love beautiful things, you know, things that are exciting, they look nice, or creativity in all of its form. But then I get very overexcited and don't really know how to regulate that excitement. Like just coming and staring at the lamp, you know, over and over again. But that's why creativity really, really helps. You know, just being creative and having an outlet for all that energy I find really helpful. My mum's the same. She's very creative. You know, she can get loads of rags and material and create a beautiful dress out of it. She's amazing. You know, she loves poetry. I mean, her poetry's crap, actually. But, you know, at least she likes it. She likes to have a pipe, as she says, and write a bit of poetry of an evening. She's a brilliant artist as well. I think about all my family. They're all very funny people. And they're all very, very creative people. They've all got it. And I think that's another thing for them, because there wasn't the outlet for them, the background that they had. The money wasn't there and stuff like that. So they weren't able to have these outlets. For me, being creative keeps me so far away, neurosis, neurotic thought processes, because it's actually the same energy that you put into it, but it just has a positive outlet for me. You know, is that interesting or just a sort of a rambling mess?
Yeah, there is.
Thanks, she's giving me a thumb. Fabulous, thank you.
It's sad though when there isn't that outlook. So, have you had like normal jobs where you? Because I felt like I used to work at a Superdry shop in Birmingham in the Bullring, and because I'd get so distracted. Even when I was a kid, if I did something naughty, I'd get told to go in the corner, and then I'd forget and just be off chatting to people, and the teacher would be like, "What are you doing? Yeah. I told you to get in the corner." I'm like, "I'm sorry, I forgot." And then,
because you're bored. I remember I used to walk around the class. The teacher, what are you doing? I said, I'm bored. That's why by the time I got to 12, I was absconding all the time. I was actually excluded for arriving drunk in a bikini one day. I know, and it said on the letter, she keeps arriving in non-uniform, a bikini on one occasion. You know, so, but it's true, I was constantly bored, so you get out of school and stuff. But I remember even when I was like about 8, they used to play Wink Wink Murder in class. You got wink at someone
that.
And then I hated it. Because say you're dead straight away, you've just got to sit there. You've got to lie like that. So I just made a sign that said dead, put it on the office, put it on my desk and went off and did other things. My teacher at the time said, we've got to a point now where we just understand Sophie's got to do her own thing and we've just got to let her be. Because you get restless. I'm not very good at being still.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm definitely the same. Because at the Superdry shop, they, in the end, to keep me amused, because otherwise I'd just be wandering off. And then I decided, because I thought it was more exciting to run after burglars and stuff. So then that was getting me in trouble, because I just
adrenaline junkie.
Just be sprinting after this robber that did the classic when you if you get a bag, you put tinfoil around it, so when you put clothes in, it doesn't set the alarms off. So I'd spotted it, and then I ran after him, and then I was like, oh, I wonder what I'm going to do now, because I'm going to have to accost him.
Yeah.
And then it was like out of a film, from out of nowhere, 6 guys with walkie-talkies came and went, did he go that way? And I was like, so they must have been watching. So I said, yes, that way. So then they got him, brought him back, and then brought him to the living room, and I remember at the time, Gok Wan was doing a catwalk show, so all this was happening.
I mean, this could be a psychotic episode, really. Yeah. We're not quite sure.
So then they brought him back. He was called Lance, which is my dad's name, that threw me. And then he was in the staff room at the Superdry store. And then everyone was going, oh, Harry, are you going to your local? Because then I was finishing work and everyone was going, oh, are you going to your local? Then saying my local. And I was like, there is a robber here that I have just caught. And you're telling him where I live, you bloody bastard. And then, anyway, that was by the by. Yeah, he stole thousands of it was those, you know, those leather irrelevant. So Bradgelinas they were called. So the men ones were anyway. So yeah, so they used to make up jobs for me to keep me amused, so I wasn't going off with robbers. And
it's funny how people accommodate people like us, isn't it? You find your life of I had a job at TK Maxx and they were like, let her do the notice board.
Did you?
6 years, yeah.
Right, God, you did a good stint, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I used to come there and back after, like, so I worked there for a bit and then I went to uni and then I'd come back in the holidays. So I was quite erratic with it.
Yeah. But it's hard as well with, if you're on the psychosis spectrum. I need to stop saying that because I don't have psychosis. I just notice the genetic qualities that are similar. But this, you struggle with routine, you struggle with normality and things being the same. I remember the music in TK Maxx. It used to go on a loop every day and I'd hear the same songs every... And it used to drive me fucking insane. You know, you'd have to do the announcements every day on the tannoy. Well, I started doing different accents, going, hello, welcome to TK Maxx. I think I was just bored or something. I couldn't quite contain it.
But I think TK Maxx is probably the most chaotic place in retail that we could find.
Yeah. It's a jumble sale, isn't it?
It is a corporate jumble sale. So, yeah. But in the Superdry shop, so because I kept going all off-piste, they one day I came in and they said we've got a new job for you, Harriet. I said, wonderful, what is it? They said, denim specialist. I said, that's not a thing. You just make it up a job.
Oh, that's sweet. The humour in you, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. But I have a regular reoccurring dream that I end up back in TK Maxx because I must feel that doing comedy, because we're very lucky to do what we do, and I think it must be, I always dream that I'm going to end up back there. But what happened as well was I was supposed to transfer and work, because I went to uni in Birmingham, so I was supposed to transfer and work in the Birmingham TK Maxx, and the guy that sorted it out for me was this guy that... he was an idiot, and he was full of shit, and he told me that he went out with Michelle Collins and Natalie Imbruglia, and one...
Delusions of grandeur, maybe he was on this spectrum.
And then one day, Michelle Collins, I think she might have a holiday home in Cornwall, because she's come in, and she didn't recognise him, so yeah. Why would you choose Michelle Collins? What a niche choice. But maybe thought he'd never meet her.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he was supposed to be sorting out my transfer. Thought he was very cool. And then one day on a night out, I used to just after work, just take loads of drugs, go to the pubs, then go clubbing in my TK Maxx uniform. People used to shout at me down the street, TK Maxx girl. And I'd be like, I love a bargain. And then, so this guy was supposed to sort out my transfer. And one night we snogged. He was very appalled with himself. I was, but he thought he was better than me, so my woe didn't count. And then, so he sorted out my transfer. Then, when I was in Birmingham, I went to the TK Maxx in my uniform, turned up, and he hadn't sorted out. He'd lied and he hadn't sorted out, so I just looked like an absolute weirdo turning up in a TK Maxx uniform. And because I'd worked in TK Maxx for so many years, I used to make my own names on the name badges. So not only have I turned up in a TK Maxx uniform, I've also got the name Queen Latifah on my on my name badge. Damn it.
Oh,
dear. But, yeah, that's a funny old thing,
isn't it? I used to enjoy doing the transfers. We did one to Southport. You do a bit of training then they whiz you about. But me and my friend went to the Southport one. Got absolutely shit-faced, actually. Stayed up all night, but then had to be in work at Wigan the next day. I've never done this. And my friend drove us shit-faced the whole way to Wigan. And then we walked in and started our shift in Wigan, absolutely off our faces. It's amazing what you do when you're 21. Yeah, I couldn't do that now.
I couldn't do it now.
I've been sick in the sort of vases on the homeware section, do you know what I mean? You've just got the stamina for it, haven't you?
I remember once there was this place in Cornwall called the Green Blob, and it's basically just a grassy area. And and me and my friends, after a night out, we went there and we're just taking loads of pills. And I said to my friend Tim, bloody hell, Tim, I got to be at TK Maxx in a couple of hours. You've got to make me stop doing pills. And he went, I'm not the boss of you. And I went, oh, I'm going to have three more pills, aren't I? So then I sort of off my head, like proper like that. And then, do you remember scamping? So scamping at TK Maxx is like you have this pack with these stickers on it, and then you scan each barcode, and then if it's supposed to be cheaper, a red sticker comes out, and then but there's a light that comes out. So just like, with this light,
the strobe lights,
scamping it. And once I had to go into the office because basically this girl had been, because if you scamp. If you double, so it's a very trustworthy process, because if you double scamp something, it will be cheaper, but you're not allowed to double scamp it because it's not ready. Do you know what I mean? Mm. You've just got to do it once, and then that's how cheap it is. And then the next time you do it again, and then it will be even cheaper in the next site. This is so boring. I'm so sorry. So I didn't know that this girl was like scamping the same thing over and over again. So getting it cheaper, so it's theft really, because it's not supposed to be that cheap. So anyway, so it got caught out on camera, and then she was getting sacked, and then I had to come in the office and they played it. Problem was, why I got called into the office was because while she was essentially stealing, I was just dancing away. And they're like, what's this? And I was like, oh dear. But I think they found it quite funny.
Was that the strobe?
Yeah.
The strobe.
I love this.
Who needs Hacienda when you've got TK Maxx and a.
Oh dear. But the podcast, I was. Oh, bloody hell. So the podcast is. It's what I try to do, because I've got bipolar. Oh, I haven't said that, have I?
I've no idea what's been happening for the last 40 minutes.
I started saying that once, I didn't finish my trail of thought. So what I was saying is, when I got diagnosed with bipolar, everything made sense. Well, even though it was far too late and I should have got diagnosed far earlier, but I was like, oh, now everything makes sense. And there's because I am so up and down, and I just thought it was... I just thought I was a weirdo, but no, it's it
does. Do you find the diagnosis has helped you then?
Yes, but then I listened to there's this comedian that we both know called Bobby Mann, and he's got borderline.
Yeah.
And because people do say, don't they, that there's similarity, because some things that Bobby was saying, I was like, that really sounds similar to
They're
me.
They're very similar, aren't they? Bipolar and borderline. I think a lot of my relatives, nameless, have got both. It's a tricky one, though, isn't it? Because labels change with certain times in society. And they're helpful to a point, aren't they? Because I think they help communicate to other people your behavioural patterns to a degree, don't they? And they help you have a little bit of control over it. But I suppose, I don't know if you found this, but there's only so far you can go with that label, isn't there? Before it's a tricky one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't, do you know what as well? Because everyone always tells me that I've got dyspraxia, which is why learning to drive has been such a hullabaloo. And but did you know that now you can't? They don't even diagnose it anymore. It's because this guy came up to me last night, in fact, after this gig, and he said, well, he was telling me that they don't diagnose it anymore, and his daughter is dyspraxic, and so he was asking me about sort of my journey with it. I said, well, I'm not diagnosed, it's just that everybody seems to think I am. And then I said, because then I assumed that he was going to say, well, I don't think you are, my daughter is, and I felt like maybe he'd think I was sort of pretending to be something. So I went, oh, sorry if I've, you know, insulted you, because I don't know for sure. And he went, I've never known anyone more dyspraxic. Even my daughter is less dyspraxic than you. And I was like, how do you know that? And he was like, just how you are. And he was like, even like your hand. And then stepped back, knocked over a speaker. And then he was like, see? And that's like Harriet, isn't
Harriet
it?
Kemsley.
Yeah. Harriet Kemsley, another comedian. That's another reason why I didn't get diagnosed earlier, because I thought, well, she's also called Harriet. That's her thing. Do you know what I mean? She's already been...
Well, she did her assessment, didn't she? And as she walked in for the assessment, she accidentally stood in a mop bucket and went flying. I mean, in that situation, they could just go, right, yep, yeah, fine, goodbye, you don't need to do
the test.
That's
what he did, didn't it?
Tricky.
Yeah, but... yeah, so there's that, but yeah, I'm happy. Well, that's what I was going to say. So Bobby said that one thing about borderline personality disorder is when you constantly lose your trail of thought and then can't remember what's been happening. And I do that all the time. But when I was doing drugs and drinking, I thought it was down to that. But now that I'm not...
Yes, it's just your personality.
Yeah, just... It's so annoying, like, in interviews and stuff, because I'll always just... Like, my brain will just go... Yeah.
It's interesting with the... I think people have tried to diagnose me at different points with different things, and I think because I've had all my family members be heavily diagnosed and stuff. I feel I've not really wanted to go down that route. I'd rather look at my characteristics and the things I've been through and try and work out ways of navigating it from there for me. But then I have tried different medication for things, and they haven't quite worked either, so it's a tricky one. Sertraline helped me with my mood, actually, in terms of regulating. Citalopram, not so good for me. No, it made me quite erratic. You're laughing, did it have an effect on you in the same way?
No, just the Marshall of Waves. Not so good.
Not so good. I tried to sort of stab a member of the public, so not so good. But sertraline, I felt, balanced me out a lot more. And but that's the thing, isn't it, with the bipolar thing? Because there's a lot of my family been diagnosed with bipolar. And if I look at my behaviour and my hormones, it's very similar. So you could put it in either box of PMDD or bipolar, I suppose. But I've just always avoided. Maybe I need to go and get diagnosed. I don't know, but it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think it's whatever works for you, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I've noticed, because I went through a stage where I was like, I don't want to be on medication. It makes me somehow less of a good person.
There's a snobbery around it. Yeah, definitely.
And then I was like, well, the fact of the matter is, my quality of life is so much better. There's not as much impending doom, and there's not just constant thoughts sort of coming in. And if I had a gaping cyst, I'd take something for that. So yeah. I just think there needs to be less shame about it. Whatever you can do to make you feel better, I think. But then the weird thing is that one side effect I've noticed is I keep seeing mice. Like, just mice crawling past.
Is that the sertraline?
Well, that's what's happened whilst I've been on it. Right, but I've gone down a dose. But the weird thing was, the other day, because I do a mental health show, like a sort of corporates and stuff, and this woman come up to me and went, I see mice as well. And I went, oh, what medication are you on? She went, I'm not on any. And I was like, oh, you've actually got more of a problem.
It's a very different issue, isn't it? Yeah.
Once as well, before I was on sertraline, I used to see bags of dead cut-up foxes just on the floor. So then I went to the doctors and I said, excuse me, doctor, I keep seeing bags of dead cut-up foxes. And this is why I think doctors might need retraining in how they speak to people with mental health problems. Because I've said, I keep seeing bags of dead cut-up foxes. And he said, Jesus Christ. It's just... not helpful, really.
That's really funny. Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they're not great, are they, with it? You know, I've been lots with the PMDD stuff, and they just say things like, oh, cut out bread. I want to stab myself in the eye. I don't think bread's the problem here, you know. God. It's very infuriating.
And it's hormonal when it's saying cut out bread.
Yeah, they have no idea, actually. It's quite frustrating.
So frustrating. But then all it takes is, I remember when I've just been, oh, my God, thank you so much. And then I've really, like, with some doctors, I'm like, well, they're just actually doing their job. But when one person just sort of takes a moment just to try and understand, and even sometimes we'll go, are you all right, though? And you're like, yeah. No one's ever asked me.
It does have an effect, doesn't it? A bit of kindness sometimes can really open a floodgate.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because I think as well, because especially growing up, no one was asked. So I think now, even with my friendships now and stuff, I always feel like, sort of, why would people be friends with me? And do you know what, as well, one thing that was really sad when I was at college, because I was drinking and that, really, sorry, I've got something in my eye, it's a mouse. And God, imagine just a tail coming out the corner of your eye. So that would be horrible. Just a mouse. And then as well, because I was getting my fiance to, because you know, if you do have a mouse, you're supposed to get them. You're supposed to take them 5 miles away from your house because they find their way back.
Oh, really? God, yeah. I didn't realise.
So my fiance was like, "Please stop trying to get me to take your imaginary mice on a on a fucking walk." Anyway, so I was drinking early, and then it suited everyone, because then the moment I started drinking a lot, then they would just dismiss me because of that. Do you know what I mean? So it's no longer like, oh, she's troubled or there's clearly something going on. It's like, oh, she's just pissed. And I always think if someone is, especially so young, even now, if someone's behaving like an absolute piss can all the time, then there's scrape the surface.
There's obviously
something going on a bit more. And then I've turned up one day to college with two black eyes, and because of this bloody abuser, and then the teacher goes, "Oh, are you all right, Harriet? What's happened?" And I went, "Oh, I just pissed myself off, punched myself in the face, trying to be funny." And then she just went, "Oh, okay," carried on with the lesson. And then I went, and then it was like building up in me. I was like, "Well, actually, I need to bloody tell someone. So I need some help here." So then I went, "Actually, this has happened, and I don't really know what to do. I'm having such a hard time." And then she went, "Okay," and then just carried on with the lesson, and it was never spoken of again. And it was
awful, isn't it?
Yeah, really bad.
Yeah, they do miss stuff like that. They tested me for ADHD when I was in school, but I was just having a difficult time. Do you know what I mean? But they didn't push it further than that. They tested me for ADHD. She's not got it. Off you trot. That was it. But they don't check in with me. I had one maths teacher, a woman who I think she thought she was being really kind. She literally said to me, she said, "Sophie, you know, I don't know what's going on with you, but if you carry on the way you're going, you're going to leave school and the only thing you'll know how to do is have sex." Isn't that awful? Or she said something like, "Oh, be good in bed," or something like that, which I think you should never say to a teenage girl. And also, I only had one boyfriend. He just happened to be a bit of a nutter. But they made out like I was going around sleeping with everybody, but really sex slut-shaming them.
And as well, it's like making out like they're teaching you sex at school.
Yeah, well, he was quite... He was older than me, and he was a bit of a teacher?
Wand.
No, he wasn't. He was older than me, and he had... His girlfriend before me was an escort, so maybe it was that. Or maybe she just thought... And I did wear tiny skirts. I mean, you could practically see my camel's toe, you know, but that was just an expression of, you know, of rebellion.
And
you don't slut-shame a 15-year-old. I think it was really odd response. And actually, she'd have just said, "Are you all right? What's going on?"
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference, isn't there, of an approach, you know. Yeah.
Have you seen that unbelievable on Netflix?
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it?
But how it's done, it's the most accurate thing. It's about this girl, and it's, in fact, just like that. This girl went to the police that she'd been sexually assaulted, and then because she was troubled and a bit wayward and dancing on a table at a party, they were like, "Oh, I think she's lied because she's a bit all over the shop."
Yeah,
and it was,
she
was just spectacular.
She was fantastic in it,
But it was very triggering, and it made me quite ill after.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because it was so accurate. Usually when stuff like that is done, it's wrong.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I suppose because it'd be taken from real accounts as well, hadn't it, her experience. That is true, that the sort of shaming thing that goes on when you're in sort of abusive relationships. A lot of the girls in Bolton, in my area, we've talked recently and been like, "God, we were sort of all being groomed in a way by older guys." You know, they were older than us. We were the girls at the bus stop, 15, drinking cider, and nobody was particularly around to kind of, you know, check in with us. We were always at the sexual health clinic. So because we were a certain way, nobody checked in to ask us if we were all right. And we look back that now and we think, "God, no, it was horrible." There was one guy in particular, we used to go to, you know, you'd go to a party with him, and we had a joke, say, "Whatever you do, dodgy as fuck, you know, don't get shit-faced and fall asleep next to him at a party."
God.
You know, and it's a joke based on a true thing that he would go and in your sleep, he'd sort of rape you and stuff. But it was so in the culture at the time, and nobody checked in with us because they just thought the rough girls on the end of the bus stop with the tiny skirts on, and you know, and that, it's stuff like that, isn't it, that creates mental health issues.
Definitely.
Because nobody's checking in, the blaming, the shaming of women, you know, when actually we weren't women, we were like 15-year-old girls, and you're talking about men in their 20s, do you know what I mean? Anyway, that was a nice light-hearted way to end it.
But I think it's important to talk to so many people. Like, I've got a friend that if I ever, when I wasn't driving, I'd get a lift with her, she'd go, "Right, before you get in the car, can we have none of your depressing stories today?" And I'd be like,
"Don't mind."
Well, I think if things are happening, they're important to be to be spoken about, because not talking about it is, it will lead to more and more cycles of
and normalising it, isn't it? I mean, we met my friends in Bolton. We met up recently, this group of girls, and we were all like, no, it was weird actually, wasn't it? And we were like, yes, it is actually weird to wake up and a man is having sex with you. You know what I mean? Anyway, one of the girls who wasn't there had invited him to her wedding recently.
What?
Yeah, because it was so normalised and nobody talked about it, she probably thought a few years ago, what a prick, he shouldn't have done that. 10 years later, she's seen a lot of him, kind of sort of probably even forgotten what happened, but it became so normalised because nobody talked about it. And, you know, stuff like that. I mean, it's not quite Rochdale, what happened there, but it's on the spectrum of that, isn't it? You know, the spectrum, I like that word today.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's very easy for just people to just go, oh, look at them, a bunch of like slags or that sort of thing, say stuff like that, and then they don't, and then that makes it easy for them to not check in. Mm. But no, it's sad. But in conclusion, so the podcast, because I've got bipolar and it's very up and down, on my Facebook page, I ask everyone each week what good has happened. To them, just to try and see good in
to lighten the
in
mood.
A life of ups and downs. So I was going to ask the audience, but I've run out of time, so sorry. if you've got loads of goodness to say, but you can leave it on my page. Oh, I didn't know I had a bracelet on. So, in conclusion, would you like to maybe say something that is going well? So
positive. I know what you mean. Yeah. I think lots. I love being a creative person and I always feel really excited by that and feel that my background and my genetic setup allows me to have all this creative energy, and I'm pleased that it's going well as a result, and it feels like an untapped resource, which is just fabulous. It's a real gift to have that, I think. And I think I've got some wonderful friends, you know, lots of lovely connections in my life, and being honest and open and candid with you and your background and who you are just allows for more authentic relationships, which I feel very pleased with. You know, so generally, not all bad. Yeah, pretty good. Oh. And I've got a hot dog waiting, so I can't wait.
You've approached it from both ends.
Well, I was trying to think, what is the most quiet way to eat a hot dog on a podcast?
This is why I'd there like one, to... I sometimes wish that you could just unzip your stomach and put stuff in and then zip it up.
The
instead
flavours
of, instead
here,
of,
oh, no.
But maybe if your stomach had teeth and a tongue. I went to pick
connecting thoughts that are not normally connected.
Yeah, yesterday, me and my fiance went to collect the car, and it was on... the garage was on Tongue Lane. So all the way there, we were going... and I thought that was funny. Anyway, so that brings us to the end, really. Do you have any questions, quickly? You've got half a minute. If you do have a question, let me know, and I'll... Does anyone have a question? Wait a minute, would I face this or do you grab it? Do you grab this?
Like
Jezza? Oh no, he's...
You look very different. I've met you before, haven't I?
I've met
Hello
you.
Hello again.
Hello again. Where have I met you?
I don't know. I've got a terrible memory.
You look very familiar.
Yeah, you look familiar.
It's nice to see you.
Have I met you before?
I don't know. I wouldn't remember.
Have you met yourself before? There's a lot you don't know.
I try and avoid mirrors at all times. Yeah. I just wondered, if you're having a tricky week, either of you, and you've got a gig, does it affect the quality of your gig or how you feel when you're doing it?
It can be either for me. Sometimes you're just like, whoa. And other times, actually, it's just what you need and gives you that adrenaline and reconnects you with people and the room and yourself. And can be really, really positive, actually, when you're feeling a bit low. Other times, if it's a bad gig, when you're already feeling like crap and you've gone out on stage and been very vulnerable, you feel more like you're having a psychotic episode. But it varies, doesn't it, for me, anyway?
I think if you go and do a gig to really nice people, it'll be lovely if you feel like that, and I'm always glad I got out of the house. But if I go and do the Frog and Bucket in front of a load of people that are just gurning their tits off and just done sambuca through their eyes.
Yeah.
Then it's just...
That's soul destroying, because it's not about you or your performance. There's no way of connecting. These people are just here to get shit-faced at you.
Definitely. So that's not fun. But on the whole, it can really help, doesn't it? Mm. Is it the end now? Any more questions?
Another question? Anybody else?
I think everyone's like, we've heard far too much from you bloody crazy bustards. Have you the whole way through keeps it like thinking someone was watching you and then it's
not at all. I've been so focused on you and the hot dog. I've just been trying to navigate my way through. Do you know what I mean? Thinking, when can I get another bite in that looks inconspicuous? Turns out very rarely.
So yeah, so that's it really. I really appreciate you coming. I don't know whether it was what you thought it was. It would be. I don't really know what I thought it would be. Well, I do because I'm me. But I remember once, and some people would probably say that it was maybe not a great one, but I remember once there was a review on the podcast that said it's utterly shambolic, but with heart, and I love it. So I think that sort of sums it up. Thanks so much. You've been absolutely lovely, and all the best in your endeavours. Thank you. And thanks to Sophie as well. Yay! Goodbye. So now I press this.
I'd get a hot dog on the way out. It's fabulous.
That was my podcast.
My podcast.
Thanks for listening. Download, share, tell your pal at the shop. Don't worry, bye, happy. My podcast.
My podcast.